Hi folks, just before you listen to this week's episode of Worst Foot Forward with our guest James Shakeshaft, where we talk about the world's worst village idiots, spoiler alert, it's neither me nor Ben, some thank yous. We've had 4 new Patreon donors in the past week or two, and we want to give them due shout outs on the pod. Thank you Christine Purvis for chipping in $3 a month. We very much appreciate that, and you will be getting all of our bonus extra content that we post on Patreon. And thank you to Anna Eckhart, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, and Naomi and Mark. Naomi and Mark and Anna have all chucked in $5 a month each as well, and you guys will be getting our extra content on Patreon as well as getting to suggest a topic for the show. I think Ben has already been in touch. If he hasn't, he will be very soon. We, as ever, thank you to all of our Patreon donors who help keep our show on the road, particularly in these difficult monetary times for creatives and freelancers like Ben and myself. We really appreciate all the people who have chipped in over the recent months. If you're someone who hasn't donated on Patreon but you've thought about doing it, well, head on to patreon.com/worstfootforward and you can see all the various rewards you get at the different levels at which you can donate. A couple of days ago, our Patreon donors got a little sneak peek at the introductory chapter, the first draft of the introductory chapter for our book that Ben and I have started to work on, a book of lots of stories and facts and weird tales and magnificent failure that we've talked about on the podcast over the nearly 4 years we've been doing it. So we popped up a couple of pages of that first draft onto Patreon for people to just get a little look at. They'll be getting little advanced looks at various bits and pieces and chapters and things as we work on that over the coming months. So if you want to get involved, head on to patreon.com and do just that. As ever, you can find us on Twitter on @worstfoot if you want to get in touch there. You can also find Ben on @benvandevelde, I'm on @basmcstay. And you can send us an email to worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com if you want to send us a slightly longer message. That seems about it for now. Hopefully you enjoy the upcoming episode. Just to say that the audio quality in this is slightly less than what we would aim for normally. Obviously, as we're recording episodes remotely, Ben and myself aren't usually in the room together at the moment, and also our guest is on a separate line as well, so we've got sort of 3 different internet connections to rely on and 3 different microphones and 3 different rooms to record in. It's not too bad, I think it's all right, but just to say that, and hopefully we'll be able to do some more in-person recording sooner rather than later. God, I miss human contact. So yeah, settle back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode, packed full of idiocy.
Hello, mighty listeners, and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast where each week we explore the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vandervelde, and this week you find me on top of the old school clock tower in Boughton-upon-Water, wearing my pantaloons upon my head, face painted lime green, conducting a choir of geese in a rousing rendition of O Fortuna in ancient Bulgarian. Have I lost it, or is it my final throw of the dice to get an Arts Council grant to see me through the pandemic, since stand-up comedy still isn't art, apparently? And joining me amongst the baffled waterfowl is the hill to my Billy, the schmuck to my Schmendrick, and the bindle to my stiff, Barry McStay.
I've been to Boughton-on-the-Water.
And I've also been to Boughton-on-the-Water.
And the waterfowl that you mentioned, there's a place there called Birdland.
I know, I have also been to Birdland.
It has a cool maze.
Because not all of my intros are set in fantasy. Some of them have got rigorous empiricism and research at the bottom of them. It does have a maze that me and my wife have completed.
Presumably you have, otherwise you'd be recording from the middle of it still.
No, I told you. I just got out of the maze and I'm now up the clock tower. The other thing about Boughton-on-the-Water, which we may have even mentioned on the show, is Boughton-on-the-Water has a model village.
It does.
And in the model village, there's a model village of the model village.
Yes.
And in the model village of the model village, there's a model village of the model village.
It's like Christopher Nolan's favourite little British town.
It is.
Before we get too caught up in Gloucestershire villages and their merits, let me introduce our guest. Our guest this week is a multi-million dollar fast food chain founded in 2001 and now renowned especially for its milkshakes and frozen custards. What? Oh, not Shake Shack. Okay, fine. Oh, apparently our guest this week, James Shakeshaft, is a comedian and podcaster for a change. Alongside former guest of the show, Alistair Beckett King, he is one half of the Loremen, a podcast about local legends and obscure curiosities, two phrases which very much describe Ben and myself. A finalist in many new act competitions, he's also a stand-up comedian of some skill, performing around the UK to rooms of actual people, apocalyptic conditions permitting. Described by fellow comic Carl Donnelly as annoyingly good, he was also reviewed by London Is Funny as possessing an imaginative streak and disregard for cliché. Well, far be it for me to split hairs with that. I'm just over the moon to see him looking as fit as a fiddle, hope he won't overstay his welcome, and wish him a podcast of two halves where he gives it a really good go, does it for the club, and where he doesn't end up sick as a parrot at the end of it all, Jeff. With a name like a restoration comedy rake, please welcome James Shakeshaft.
Hello.
Good to have you. We finally like brought the two halves of the amulet that is the Loremen together, and now we're going to open the ancient tomb.
Oh yeah, it's just more puzzles in there, mate, though.
That sounds perfect.
That's very much our vibe on this show. We're just looking, we don't really want answers, we just want more puzzlement.
It's one of those games where when you complete it, you just have to do it again on hard mode.
Yes.
That's the better.
Now, I feel like you and Alistair are like the anti-Ben and me, because you're both really tall. You both have like your measurements on your podcast website.
Of course.
Which and Ben, you know, Ben's the long-haired one and I'm the slightly gingery one. Actually, it's like we've split Alistair in half with Ben and me.
It is a little bit, well, but the thing is, Alistair is the one who looks like he could actually be a convincing saint, whereas I am very definitely a strange anchorite who's been out in the desert for years and hasn't washed.
Yeah, you're definitely, well, more the sinner side than the saint side.
Thank you.
That's one very much James for. How did you two come about to start the Loremen, which if any of our listeners haven't listened, we heartily recommend?
Well, I think what it was, I've always been interested in these sort of weird little stories and odd little ghost stories particularly, but like the odd ones, the ones that aren't just like, oh, so you were dreaming, but the ones that are like, that's a really weird thing to have dreamt. And I was giving Alistair a lift to the Glastonbury Festival, and as we were passing by Stonehenge, we just started talking about it, and it made me realise he had similar interests.
What part of the country are you from, and what sort of lore and myths are connected with that part of the country?
So I grew up in Chipping Norton, which is in the Cotswolds.
Yes, and has the great mythical beast Rebecca Brooks there, the Gorgon of Wapping.
Yeah. She lives near the mountain, near the volcano. That's one of the modern myths that gets on my tits. The Chipping Norton set. None of them live in Chipping Norton, by the way. Clarkson was the closest, but he was still on the outskirts. Cameron lives by the tip. Which mysteriously shut down just after he became Prime Minister. Coincidence? Probably. That does mean that the local tip for that area is Dick's Pit.
Sounds right up my street.
Yeah, that was the famous 18th century British Prime Minister's Tinder name.
Yeah. I think, by the way, David Cameron shut down the local tip in Chipping Norton is the lowest key conspiracy theory I've ever heard. you're clearly very good at delving deep into mythology and exploring the esoteric. What are you less good at? What are you worst at in the world?
Very bad at saying, getting ideas in a sort of concise and short manner. I tend to kind of go on and use too many words, waffle, start to distract myself. And from having edited myself, I actually don't really speak in actual human sentences. It's sort of like scat. It's an absolute bugger to edit.
Just for listeners at home, we had to actually edit 4 minutes of James waffling on down to that concise 30 seconds you've just heard.
I'm actually being played by an actor.
Yeah. It was incredible. You are known very much as the Louis Armstrong of Oxfordshire. And we managed to just get cut all the scat out of that.
Oh, it's a wonderful world.
Yeah. Hi. I'm Helen Arney. I'm one third of the science comedy trio Festival of the Spoken Nerd, and I'm here to tell you about a podcast of unnecessary details. If you like the way that Worst Foot Forward investigates the weird and not so wonderful world in categories like worst scientist or worst element, that's the episode you've heard me in before, you'll probably enjoy a podcast of unnecessary details. Every episode starts with three nerds and a single word, and heads off in three different directions to reveal some really bizarre corners of science, maths, and technology. Things that don't seem too promising at first, but become fascinating when you get down to the nitty and or gritty. Why do squid have donut-shaped brains? What does a 1970s spacecraft have to do with credit card fraud? How is a violin just like a tiny earthquake? Find us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts by searching for Unnecessary Detail, or head to festivalofthespokennerd.com/podcast.
So this week, at the behest of Mr. Shakeshaft, we are talking about the world's worst village idiot. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I am expecting some fairly broad definitions of both the word village and idiot coming up in the next hour or so of our lives. And to kick us off is Dublin's finest brain box, Barry McStay.
Village Egypt, as they are in Ireland.
Oh, Village Egypt, of course.
Yeah. Just to put this out at the front, obviously there are some suggestions that Village Idiot might have been considered synonymous with mental illness and disability in the medieval times, so I wanted to talk a little bit about that. And there were, you know, various different ways of treating, you know, mental illness and disability was considered to be linked to morality, but also had some sort of physical traits that could be, like, you know, the four humours theory that people, I'm sure, will know about. And so they had things like purging and bloodletting and whipping to try and cure disability, which is a horrendous thing to consider. And madness was often seen as a moral issue, as a punishment for a sin or a test of faith and character and things like that. But they'd also imply Christian theology would have, you know, various helpful alternative medicines like fasting and prayer and exorcism, which I imagine is like the medieval version of goop. It's like Gwyneth Paltrow selling you, you know, jade eggs to shove up your arse to cure whatever, you know, depression you're suffering from at the time. But by the end of the 17th century into the Enlightenment, madness is seen more as a physical phenomenon. There's less of this sort of idea of being involving the soul or morals. But it sort of then veers into the idea of the mentally ill being viewed as wild animals, and even harsher treatments, you get restraints being used. Whereas in the past, you might have had the idea of the village idiot literally being someone that they would have an accepted social role, and an individual that was dependent on society, but also contributed to the fabric of that society. And there's a guy called Michael Oliver who wrote an essay in the 80s called Disability and Dependency, a creation of Industrial Societies, who suggests that as we move into a more capitalist industrial landscape, and the idea of people being contributing towards commodities and the economization of people, suddenly people with disabilities are less useful, and so they get shunted into madhouses and things like that. For example, in London, there were 16 madhouses in 1774. There were 40 by 1819. So, you know, nearly just with less than 50 years. Obviously, at the time, the Industrial Revolution was cracking on, so to speak. So no matter how enlightened the Enlightenment was, it seems that maybe there was a less tender view of how to treat the so-called village idiot. So I just wanted to mention that stuff and say we're aware.
It's important context.
Yeah. Nickelback's original name was Village Idiot.
Good. That's much more like it. Thank you.
You're welcome. And it is often used as a term of abuse in various different forms. I particularly like this one from Wales Online in 2006, writing about the New Zealand Herald. A guy called Chris Ratu, a sports writer in the New Zealand Herald, dismissed the Welsh rugby team as a bunch of losers full of talk, and called them village idiots who are only good at singing and with players who lie down for the cause. This was unsurprisingly in the run-up to a rugby international between New Zealand and Wales. So he dismissed a 74,000 sellout match between Wales and the All Blacks in 2006 as a non-event, just saying, what's this idea of there being, like, you know, a long-standing tradition of rugby rivalry between our two great nations? We're brilliant, and let's face it, Wales are rubbish. They're the village idiots of rugby union. They have fans who live for the game, administrators who've killed it, and players who lie down for the cause. Everyone still blathers on about their singing and their history and blah, da, blah, 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 and how Blethyn someone or Gareth someone else had a really great game because they ran past this bloke or tackled that bloke.
That's standard rugby stuff, though, isn't it?
Yeah. He says if rugby between New Zealand and Wales was a boxing contest, they would have stopped it many rounds ago and revoked the Welsh licence. And then I got to sort of an example of a real village idiot. There's a story about the Siege of Constantinople in 1453, and which was finally broken into by the Ottoman hordes on the 29th of May, that there was a gate, a side gate into the city, which had been under siege for quite a lengthy time, called the Kirkka Porta, which was left open by accident by someone inside Constantinople, allowing the first 50 or so Ottoman troops into the city, which they'd been failing to enter for quite a long time. And they raised their flag on top of the inner wall and started firing on the soldiers inside the city. And that spread panic and led to the eventual fall of it. You know the way I say everyone makes mistakes, you know, everyone's human. As far as mistakes go, that's a pretty big one to have against your name.
Again, that's basic siege mentality. That's just 101, being siege.
Yeah, we've got doors and a wall for a reason. I mean, the only time that my mother left our alarm off in our house when I was growing up was the day we got robbed, oddly enough. She was coming to collect myself and my brother from school, and she rushed out the house and remembered she'd not turned the alarm, but she was only going to be 10 minutes, and came back and the house had been robbed. So, but that was just, you know, some jewellery disappeared. This was like several thousand people died and an entire empire collapsed.
That's yeah, I like that. It's the equivalent of an empire collapsing because you left the gas on.
Yeah. I looked at the derivation of some words for idiot as well. Oaf, which originally referred to an ugly child that elves left behind to replace the pretty one that they'd carried off. An unattractive changeling, basically.
Oh, yeah.
A sap, shortened from an 1800s word, sap skull, whose head is like sapwood, which is quite soft, sap-conducting wood. Boob, or booby. So booby was being used for a long, long time from the 1600s. Samuel Johnson has booby in the dictionary, because it says a dull, heavy, stupid fellow or a lubber. And in the early 1900s, the Americans, because they're in a hurry, couldn't deal with two syllables and decided to shorten it to boob. And the suggestion is maybe it comes from the Spanish bobo, which meant fool as well.
Oh, wow. So is that where we get, you know, there's a thing if there's a large, lumbering, idiotic figure in fiction, or indeed in my audience, I will often refer to them as bobo.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it could be from that.
Yeah, bobo's, you know, quite a sort of idiot chimp.
Yeah. Thank you. It's the nicest thing you've ever said to me. Buffoon. That's a professional clown from the late 16th century, which comes from the Italian buffare, meaning to puff out your cheeks, which is that something that clowns would do as a sort of a comic expression. I really like rube. Someone who's a country bumpkin is a rube.
Yes.
And this comes from the shortened form of the name Reuben, which was a biblical name, and apparently it was found among a lot of people who lived in the countryside. And so it's just shortened from the name Reuben.
Oh.
Yeah.
Was he this man in the Bible?
I don't know, but let's decide yes he is right here, right now. If you're listening, God, we've decided Reuben is the dumbest one of the lot. I think he's one of the 12 tribes of Israel. He's one of the Joseph's brothers, isn't he?
Yep.
Ben will correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure.
Stupidest tribe.
Yeah, the stupidest tribe. Shmo and Shmuck. I thought we'd get some Yiddish in. Do you know what Shmuck means, Ben?
Penis.
Yes, schmuck means penis. Didn't realize that. It's from, apparently it could be from the Polish schmuck, meaning grass snake.
I like the idea of calling someone both a schmuck and a boob. Like, you, sir, are an anatomical peculiarity.
Yeah. Penis with tits. Yeah. Everyone's having.
Yeah, instead of the testicles.
I hadn't thought about that. Halfway up the penis was a small pair of boobs.
And then the slit in the penis is actually a tiny vagina, and you've condensed all of your sexual organs into one easy-to-manage organ.
Yeah, it's like, a camel is a horse designed by committee.
Yeah.
I think you've designed genitals by committee.
Yeah, or by teenager. He's just cutting out all of the interesting other bits. but I did read about some actual fools. And there is this idea of, there's obviously court jesters, but there are also common fools. So there were like fools who their job was to be jesters, but for a village or a town rather than specifically for the court. But I like the story about some of the recruitment of some of them. They'd often just be spotted by a nobleman as like doing something vaguely amusing in a field. And they're like, I'm going to hire you. It's like doing an open spot. And then, you know, a booker sees you, decides, yeah, you're the guy for me. There's a story about someone called Tenali Rama, who was one of a jester from India, who apparently got his position by making King Krishnadevaraya laugh. According to one story, he organized the king's guru to carry him around on his shoulders so the king could see him. And the king was furious that his holy man was being humiliated in this way by having someone sit on his shoulders, he sent some guards out to beat the man riding on the guru's shoulders. And Tenali Rama saw them coming, jumped down, begged for forgiveness from the guru, and insisted that he give the guru a ride on his own back to make amends for it. And when the guards arrived, they beat the guy sitting on the back of the other guy. And wow. So the king found that hilarious and appointed Tenali Rama as his jester.
I gotta say, ancient kings, not renowned for their sense of humour.
No, yeah, that's quite a good one, though. There's a German guy, Paul Wust. He declined the offer of serving as a jester when Duke Eberhard, the bearded of Württemberg, invited him to be his jester. He replied, "My father sired his own fool. If you want one too, then go and sire one for yourself."
Ow.
Nice sort of self-burn. The same story apparently applies to Will Somers. He mocked Henry VIII's predilection for having so many wives, going, "You've had so many wives and still living in hope to have more. Why, of some one of them, cannot you get a fool?" And there was a guy called Klaus Narr, who was a famous jester from Germany, and he travelled around during the 15th and 16th century. And one of the stories about him is that he was travelling with one of his patrons, Elector Ernst. And Klaus was a bit curious about what the commotion that was happening up ahead. There was a lot of horse and wagons. He was worried his geese would be stolen in sort of the mass of people milling around. So he secured his goslings by putting their necks through his belt while carrying the older geese under his arms. And when his patron Ernst saw him, he laughed at him, decided he was a born jester for, you know, accidentally strangling his own goslings. So Ernst gave him 20 guilders as compensation for the strangled goslings and took to be his jester. There's a similar story told of a guy called Jamie Fleeman, who's a famous Scottish jester to the Lord of Udney. And he, along with being a jester, was a cowherd and a goose guardian. It's my favourite daily broadsheet. And he got annoyed with the geese wandering around all the time, and so he twisted straw rope around their necks and tried to walk home with them on this, unaware he was throttling them one by one behind him. And so he realised a bit too late, and they were quite rare geese, so he knew he'd been in trouble. So he dragged them into the poultry yard and stuffed their throats with food. And then when asked if the geese were safely in the poultry yard, he replied cheerfully, "Safe! They're gobble, gobble, gobbling as if they'd never seen food for 12 months. Safe! I warrant they're safe enough if they haven't choked themselves."
Oh, God.
So well done him. But I got to give you my choice for the world's worst jester. And this story comes from the Washington Post from 2017, and a town called Story, Indiana. And Story, Indiana holds one election a year, and it's for the post of village idiot.
Yes! Brilliant.
So on a day that qualified a guy called Brad Cox as idiot, he was changing his wife's car oil, like he'd done loads of times before. He watched her drive away, and within miles, the car was belching out black smoke and was really in a bad way. And Cox came along and inspected, and he said, "I'm not a mechanic by any means, but I can change my own damn oil." And he blamed his wife. He said that she'd taken a too bumpy a road and she cracked the engine. And the town mechanic came and looked at it the next day and said that instead of draining the motor oil, Cox had accidentally emptied the transmission fluid and as a result poured fresh motor oil on top of old motor oil and sent his wife off to work with a dry transmission and had blown a gasket. So it was his fault. So his wife did what anyone would do. She nominated him for the role of village idiot. That has been a tradition that they've held there. Not terribly old. It's been since the early 2000s they've been doing this. The town has existed since the 1850s. But they don't have a mayor, they don't have a government, and the only official title that anyone holds is this village idiot role. So throughout the year, the bartender in the Story Inn, which is the local tavern, they collect nominations on little pieces of paper from various people in the town for someone doing something dumb, and they put them in a glass jar. On April Fool's Day, of course, they announce a new winner. They encourage people to vote early and often, so it's not a very closely watched electoral system. And so there are great stories about it. A lot of them seem to be around motors and cars. Ricky Sawyers was the first official elected idiot. He rolled his truck, having just bought it from a local dealership while driving it home on April 1st, 1999. Evan Hofstetter won the role. He has it in his email signature. He's the owner of this bar, and he has Village Idiot 06 in the sign up to his emails. He asked someone who came into his bar who'd order a gin and tonic how to make a gin and tonic. Danny Ham, another tavern bartender, set her own hair on fire while smoking, driving to work, and applying hairspray all at the same time.
This is all in the same village.
These are all people who have won the time, been elected village idiot in this town.
This is like one single town hosting its own Ig Nobel Prize contest.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, they're not allowed the same person twice in a row or anything. So they're all individual, newly appointed idiots every year. Another guy was a musician. He once hit a cow on his way to perform at the inn where the nominations are put in.
Than stupid though, right?
Yeah, a lot of them seem to be just, you know, motor accidents and unfortunate things. But I did like this one. There was one person who, a tavern regular, who ran over her own foot with her own truck, nearly doing the full Brian Harvey. And another woman who took the blame for her Great Dane's flatulence so her husband wouldn't kick the dog out of the house. There have been one pair of joint village idiots, a married couple. They've newly married. They stepped outside of their cottage to cool down after a dip in the hot tub, and the door locked behind them. And so the wife sent her husband to the front desk to get a new key at the peak of dinner hour, clad only in his bath towel. So they were both jointly named the village idiot for Story, Indiana. One former idiot says, it's a very small town. It's hard to hide stupidity. So I'm going to put forward all the village idiots of the town of Story, Indiana, for my world's worst village idiot. The recently newly elected Queen of Naboo, I thought, was the stupidest, you know, elected title I'd ever heard. Thanks, George Lucas. But I think the elected village idiot of Story, Indiana seems to be a close second.
Very good. A likely story.
I've been doing a bit of reading around the topic of village idiots. Mine's much more rural. It's like your classic sort of English folktale of the Moonrakers, like the group of people who are trying to pull the cheese that's fallen into the pond, or the moon that they think has fallen into the pond at night time.
Mm. And Moonrakers is, it's Wiltshire, isn't it?
Caning was the village that was supposedly to originate from. But the trick behind that was they were apparently actually brandy smugglers, and they'd hidden their brandy barrels in the pond. And when someone came along and was like, what are you doing? They're like, oh, we're just trying to get the moon out of the pond, mate. Don't worry, go on. And then they went off, and then it's like, oh, we got our brandy. Yeah, so
that is amazing.
That's quite clever. However, the people of Bishop's Caning did think that a watch that one of them found on the hill was a tick toad, as in a toad that ticked. So they smashed it.
That's such a wonderful turn of phrase.
Was it like one of those like wristwatches you used to be able to get, which had the flick up top, so it'd have like a picture of a toad on the front of it, and you'd flick it up, and then the clock was inside.
Maybe, or maybe it was one of those giant Swatch ones from the 80s.
Yes,
we used to use a lot. And I'm like, well, it can't be a normal watch; it's too big.
What do they think of a grandfather? It's a ticking grandfather. Kill it! Kill it!
There was another one in a town called Ripley. They were called the Dead Horseshoers because a blacksmith had thrown a horse to the ground and not realised that it had died, and he hammered on some new horseshoes and then tried to get it up, and it didn't get up, and then he like flapped it and it just wouldn't get up, and people came and were like, what are you doing to that clearly dead horse? And he was like, oh, right. And now the town are known as that.
He was nearly onto something then. I think he had the idea for the electrocardiogram thing those really early, but it was a very premature prototype, and he thought you have to apply them to the feet rather than the chest
and then flap an apron
in
their face.
Yeah,
going back to the Bishop's Caning, there was another thing that I read, and maybe this is more reflective on me than anything else. Other stories that are told about their village are that they have put manure around the church steeple to make it grow higher. But when the manure sort of dries out a bit and settles, it would have left a mark, and so there'd be like a couple of inches. It would look like the tower had grown by a couple of inches out of the manure. which that's fair enough. If you don't know, if you weren't there to see the church being built, you might think that churches are naturally occurring.
Yeah. Do you think Donald Trump does that to all of his hotels that he lies about how tall they are?
Just covers them in manure.
Well, bullshit of some sort, yeah.
The one thing they say, that people say about them that they did that was so bad is that when there was meant to be a comet coming by, so they all went to the top of the hill to get a better look at it. Is that stupid?
No, I don't think that's dumb.
No, it doesn't show quite the level of astronomical sophistication that I would apply in such a situation. But if you were a medieval bumpkin, then that makes a reasonable amount of sense.
Plus you want to get, you know, we don't want too many trees or houses around blocking your view of the celestial sphere.
I guess they didn't need to get out of the way of, like, streetlight pollution or anything like that.
Is this village not full of multi-story apartment blocks?
Yeah. They just went to the top of the NCP car park.
Yeah.
My guys are the Yubberton Yawney from the town of Ebrington. They're the locals to me. They're in Gloucestershire. They did all the classics with the church spire. They put manure around it. There was one time they wanted to move their church, and so they put all their coats down on one side of the church, and then they went around to the other side of the church and started pushing it to move the church up the hill, because they wanted to get it on top of the hill so it looked better than Chipping Camden's.
Yeah.
And while they were pushing the church, someone stole all their coats. And so they finished pushing, they went round, all their churches were gone. They're like, oh no, we've pushed the church on top of our coats. What idiots we are.
Maybe they were being polite to get the church across a puddle, though.
Yes. But they're not. They've got a little bit of wit about them, because the story told of them during the Second World War is when they removed all the road signs during the Second World War in case there was an invasion, people would often get lost. And a posh bloke was driving, trying to find Morton in Marsh, and he stopped off in Ebrington, Yubberton. He asked a local the way to Morton in Marsh, and he said, well, I don't know. And he said, what about Chipping Camden then? He goes, well, I don't know. He said, good gracious, man, don't you know anything? And he said, well, I knows where I am, and that's a lot more than you. And another one is someone stopped off at the pub and heard it was Ebrington and said, oh, this is where all the fools live. And locals replied, well, I don't know about liver, but we certainly get a lot passing through.
Oh, nice. I like a fool with a little scorpion sting. Ebrington, and you said Yubberton Yawney as well.
That's what they're known as. So Ebrington in the local dialect is called Yubberton. The particular brand of local is Yubberton Yawney.
What's Yawney mean?
Yawney's just because they're like...
For listeners at home, James is doing a slack-jawed, yawning face.
They have brought out a beer called the Yawney, and it's very nice. Lovely beer.
Is it particularly prevalent down in, you know, the West Country, that part of the world? Is that why we associate West Country accent with, you know, stupid people as well, as opposed and pirates? Stupid people and pirates. I presume that's all that there is in the West Country.
Yeah. You either go into farming, piracy, or you're too stupid for either.
farming steeples.
or church growing.
Yeah, church growing.
Yeah, and every now and then there'll be one who comes back with a little bit of a mast and be like, well, if I plant this in the ground, I'll build a pirate ship.
But they float out in the water all the time, and they get bigger. They don't grow, do they?
They do if they're coming closer towards you. If they don't understand, you know, distance and perspective, then...
Because they don't understand that coats can be moved.
God, it must be awful going to a house party in Yubberton Yawney. Like, can I just put it in the bedroom? No, you just leave them there and they just move of their own accord.
Or they've put them in the bedroom and they're like, well, now I'm going to have to buy a new bed. 20 coats on this one.
What, so according to the people of Ebrington, coats are essentially carnivorous. Yeah, you just see a guy putting his coat and going, oh no, another person's being eaten.
I sense a Doctor Who plot being born.
Yeah, either that or a John Wyndham novel.
Yeah.
I took the religious bent, which I think Barry slightly alluded to, and looked at various holy fools. And particularly in Eastern Orthodox Christianity, there is something called the Eurodivi. Do you know what? That's the first time I've said it out loud, and didn't occur to me that the word divvy is at the end of it. I don't know. You've heard that before, calling someone a div, or is that a very Geordie thing? Oh, right. Cool. Well, of course you did. It was in Gloucestershire, mate.
Is that also the first use of the word YOLO?
Not YOLO, Euro. Divi.
Euro, they invented the Euro.
They invented the Euro. No,
we're going to Euro Disney. Is that what you said?
No, no.
Oh, Euro Disney again.
Yeah.
Well, this has started off as well as could be expected.
They've got a great spire in Euro Disney. Maybe we should put an Euro around that.
Yeah, the parades at Euro Divi are disgusting. The Euro Divi is Russian for a holy fool.
It's someone who their behaviour is caused either by mistake or feeble-mindedness, but is deliberate, irritating, even provocative.
That's great.
That's my kind of div.
Yeah. And the notion is that they take on this guise of foolishness and insanity to conceal their own perfection from the world and thus avoiding praise. Obviously, some of the things that they do in it are things like going around half naked, being homeless, speaking in riddles, pretending to be clairvoyant or prophetic, or doing things that seem immoral. But apparently, it's always to make a point. And we're right on the borderline here of performance art, aren't we?
Yeah.
Interestingly, one of the people who considered to be one of the first holy fools was a woman, Saint Isadora, who was a 4th century AD saint. Very little is known about her other than that she is considered one of the few desert mothers. There's a lot of desert fathers who we actually talked about in our episode with Alistair. But her erratic behaviour whilst living in an abbey or a monastery where the other people in there considered her to be demon-possessed, Palladius, a writer from the time, wrote that she feigned madness and possession by a demon. But the most that I can find about her behaviour that may have been just that she was demon-possessed was that none of the other 400 sisters ever saw her chewing or eating a formal meal during the years of her life. She never sat at a table, never partook on a piece of bread, but wiping up the crumbs from the table and washing the kitchen pots, she was content with what she got in the way. So I don't think she was mad. I think that she was just bulimic.
What was the thing you said that this guy Palladius said that she feigned this madness?
Yes.
Okay. So Palladius, you've managed to, you know, nail down someone pretending to be mad. Why, if you're able to get your head around the idea that some people can pretend to be mad, do we have all of these stories of people who were, like, possessed? There are so many frauds in history, and they clearly had the capacity to spot some of them. Why are they taken in time after time after time? Oh, they're speaking in tongues, or they could be feigning it. We've spotted Isadora, why can't we spot some more of them?
Well, I don't know. It's just because clearly the people who are speaking in tongues are just... listen, there's holy idiots and there's useful idiots.
Oh, yeah.
And the ones speaking in tongues are the useful idiots.
Yeah.
I also looked at others. There's probably the most famous holy fool of all was Basil. And there was this... not that one. And because there was the notion of being... the term is being, you were a fool for Christ. Which...
I'm a fool for Christ.
Precisely. But Basil the Fool for Christ is also known as Basil the Blessed, and it is he that St. Basil's Church in Moscow is named for.
Ah, cool.
So he was originally an apprentice shoemaker. Blessed are the shoemakers. He went to Moscow to seek alms, ALMS, just to avoid any confusion there. And his eccentric lifestyle included shoplifting, giving to the poor to shame the miserly, and wandering around naked, weighed down with chains and an iron cap. He even rebuked Ivan the Terrible for not paying attention to the church, surely a sign of madness, and did many apocalyptic prophecies. But my favourite sort of holy fools are not Christian ones, but a couple of Buddhist ones. There was a Zen poet called Hanshan who was described as having divine madness and explained that when people would ask him about Zen Buddhism, he would just laugh hysterically in their face. There's a man who knows that his belief system is clearly just bullshit. There was a 15th century Zen master called Ikkyu, who used to run around his town with a human skeleton, spreading the message of the impermanence of life and the grim certainty of death.
Was he called Ikkyu? Because that's what people said when he came near them with a skeleton. Ikkyu!
Yeah. Yeah, astonishing nominative determinism there.
Yeah.
Technically, we all do wander around with a human skeleton.
we carry ours around in a much more efficient manner.
Yeah. Technically, Ben, it carries us.
Oh, God, we're getting so philosophical here. There's an amazing figure who I found who is an Islamic figure, I think related to Sufism, which is Islamic mysticism, a chap called Nasruddin Hodja, or Mullah Nasruddin. And he was a Seljuk. The Seljuk sort of hung around in sort of modern day Turkey going into Central Asia. And he was one of these notions of being like a wise man who acted with foolish behavior, but there was always a moral at the end of it. And the International Nasruddin Hodja Festival is celebrated between the 5th and the 10th of July in his hometown every year. And there's a couple of great stories here. And I have to say that his behaviour to me feels very Jewish. And obviously, I would say that. And we're going to get on to my people in a minute. But there's one story, which is the story of the sermon. He was once invited to deliver a sermon. When he got on the pulpit, he asked, "Do you know what I'm going to say?" The audience replied, "No." So he announced, "Well, I have no desire to speak to people who don't even know what I'll be talking about," and promptly left.
Wow, that's like a real Larry David doing stand-up intro, isn't
it? Exactly. The people felt embarrassed and called him back the next day. This time, when he asked the same question, the people replied, "Yes." So Nasruddin said, "Well, since you already know what I'm going to say, I won't waste any more of your time." And
yes! That's my TED talk.
Yes. Now the people were really perplexed. They decided to try one more time, and once again invited the mullah to speak the following week. Once again, he asked the same question, "Do you know what I'm going to say?" Now the people were prepared, so half of them answered yes, while the other half replied no. So Nasruddin said, "Let the half who know what I'm going to say tell it to the half who don't," and left.
Did he get paid for each and every one of those appearances?
Yes.
Very good.
Yeah, a cunning financial mind there, real entrepreneur. That's and so then good. The other one, and this, I mean, this is a trope that you guys might have heard before in other folklore, but the mullah had lost his ring in a living room. He searched for it for a while, but since he could not find it, he went out to the yard and began looking there. His wife, who saw what he was doing, said, "Mullah, you've lost your ring in the room. What are you looking for it in the yard?" And the mullah stroked his beard and said, "Well, the room is too dark and I can't see very well. I came out to the courtyard to look for my ring because there's much more light out here." That's pure fucking Spike Milligan. It's incredible.
So good.
Yeah, I found another one from ancient Greece. A man's father having died, the son dutifully took the body to the embalmers. When he returned at the appointed time to take it, there happened to be a number of bodies in the same place. So the embalmer asked if his father had any peculiarity by which his body might be recognised, and the simpleton replied, "Oh yeah, he had a cough."
And that's where coffins get their name from.
Yes, of course. But I looked for mine at places that are famous for containing fools. And there is, in Yiddish folklore, a place called Chelm, which is a real village in Poland. And the people of Chelm are renowned for being wise fools. And the mythical story goes that when God was populating the earth, God assigned two angels to spread wisdom and foolishness evenly across the world. And the angels were very careful to distribute the wise and foolish souls evenly. However, the angel carrying the foolish soul stumbled over a mountain range and spilled a large number of them in one place. And that place was the village of Chelm.
God doesn't make any mistakes, though.
No, God doesn't make any mistakes. It's all the angels.
Yeah, that's actually, that mountain range, which is a trip hazard, is actually a feature. It's actually a feature.
Yes. So some of the stories of Chelm include: one Jewish Chelm resident bought a fish on a Friday in order to cook it for Shabbos. He put the live fish underneath his coat and the fish slapped his face with its tail. He went to the Chelm court to submit a charge and the court sentenced the fish to death by drowning. A young housewife living in the town of Chelm had a very strange occurrence. One morning, after buttering a piece of bread, she accidentally dropped it on the floor. To her amazement, it fell butter side up. Now, as everyone knows, when a buttered piece of bread is dropped on the floor, it always falls butter side down. It's just the laws of physics. But on this occasion, it had fallen butter side up and was a great mystery. So all the rabbis and elders of Chelm gammoned together, and they spent 3 days in the synagogue fasting and praying and debating. And after those 3 days, they returned to the young housewife with this answer: "Madam, the problem is that you've buttered the wrong side of the bread."
Wow, this sounds like the Brexit negotiations.
Just perfect. And there are so many places around the world that have these foolish towns in ancient Greece. There was a place called Abdera. Germany, it's the people of Schildberg. The Dutch make jokes about the inhabitants of Kampen. In Andalusia, there's the town of Lepe. And found in the same province where Lepe is, Huelva, the typical mineral from the River Tinto is pyrite. Fool's gold.
Ah, cool. Yeah, in Ireland, it's County Kerry. County Kerry are considered the idiots, so you do Kerry man jokes. So all those jokes about, you know, a Kerry man tells his friend he's going to be the first Irish astronaut to go to the sun, and his friend goes, but you'll burn up, and he goes, no, we're going at night. You put whatever the stupid town from your country or area is instead of Kerry man.
I've got two more to tell you about very quickly before my choice. There is the Wise Men of Gotham, which is potentially the first version of it in England, and it goes all the way back to the time of King John and allegedly Robin Hood. King John was intending to travel through the neighborhood of Gotham in Nottinghamshire. At that time, any road he traveled on was made a public highway, but the people of Gotham didn't want a public highway through their village, so the villagers
HS2 protests of their own time.
So the villagers feigned imbecility when the royal messengers arrived. So wherever the messengers went, they did dumb things. And based on this report, John decided, oh, we're not going anywhere near there, and located his hunting lodge elsewhere.
It is a silly place.
This is a silly place. We will not go there. So some of the things that were recorded as being done were they drowned an eel in a pool of water. So there's another trope coming up again. Some people were found dragging carts upon a large barn to shade the wood from the sun. Others were tumbling the cheese down a hill. Hello, British folk tradition. And some were employed in hedging in a cuckoo which had perched upon an old bush which stood where the present one now stands. This notion of the fools of Gotham became a trope that was so strong for foolishness that when a gentleman called Bill Finger named the home of Batman, he used Gotham City.
And is that why we have a Joker?
Correct.
That's so good. That's a just swallowing a beautiful little nugget of trivia that just perfectly made.
So there's a story titled Cityscape in the Batman Chronicles, and it's revealed that Gotham was initially built for the purpose of housing the criminally insane. And Robin reads a journal that tells of how Gotham got its name, which refers to Gotham, the village in England.
Oh, wow. And
yeah.
But so ironic that obviously Robin Hood is the stealing from the rich and giving to the poor back in the olden days in Gotham, and now we've got a multi-billionaire vigilante is their own Robin Hood.
There is a nursery rhyme of the wise men of Gotham. Three wise men of Gotham. They went to sea in a bowl, and if the bowl had been stronger, my song would have been longer. And that is actually recited by the Joker in the comic The Batman of Arkham.
Oh, wow.
Wonderful thing to have found. And one other place in Britain, in Cogshall, in Essex, which again, synonymous with stupidity. There's an English rhyme again. Braintree for the pure, Bocking for the poor, Cogshall for the jeering town, and Kelverton for the whore. The reason why Cogshall was renowned for being full of fools is that one day the Cogshall town clock chimed 11 times at noon. And when the villagers heard that the town clock nearby in another village had struck 12 times at 11 o'clock, they rode to that town to collect the missing stroke. Other dumb things they've done include winching up a cow onto the church roof to eat the grass growing there.
And to, you know, shit around it to make it grow taller.
Of course.
That's killing two birds with one stone.
That's killing one cow with one winch. They also knocked down one of the two windmills as there would not be enough wind for both of them.
Going to happen with all these wind farms at the moment? It's cruel, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true.
But my choice, we're going to go to Denmark. And we're going to talk about the people of Mols, M-O-L-S. And there is in Danish folklore something called a Molbo story, which refers to the simple folk of that town. And it's pretty famous in Danish culture. In 1898, the composer Olfert Jespersen and the lyricist Herman Pedersen premiered an opera called The Molboen, The People of Moles. And it not only had a memorable score, but numerous references to Molbo stories, such as the stork in the corn and leg sorting. I don't know about those, but you can imagine that leg sorting is going to be pretty fucking stupid. But my favourite one, and this is why I think the people of Moles are the world's worst village idiots, is the story of the headless man. So some people from Moles went into the forest early in the morning to collect some wood. And one morning, they drove to the forest to bring home a tree they'd bought. But on the way, the one who went there first happened to lose his axe. And when the others saw that, they thought that he'd thrown it away on purpose. So they threw away all their axes as well. Now, they stood at the forest and they had nothing with which to chop down the tree. And they didn't know what to do. But all of a sudden, one of them had a brilliant idea of how to pull the tree down. They hadn't brought a rope, but instead one of them climbed the tree, lay his head in the cleavage between two branches, and then the others pulled his legs until they hoped the tree would yield. However, they pulled and pulled, and eventually all the men pulled backwards, including the chap who'd put his head between the cleavage of the tree. However, he had no head. All of the people with him couldn't fathom why that had happened, and they searched and searched, but they didn't find the head because it was stuck in the tree. Well, that couldn't be helped, and it was now time to return home. So they laid the headless man in the wagon and took him home to his wife and asked if she was sure that her husband had brought his head when he left home this morning. His wife replied, "Well, I can't remember that right now," but then she thought for a while and said, "Oh, yes, he did bring his head," she said. "He ate cabbage with it this morning before he left."
When you said that there was going to be a headless man and then they were all just throwing their axes blindly into the forest, I assumed we were having some sort of Dick Cheney out hunting moment. But that story's so much better.
I was a bit concerned that when they saw one guy get rid of his axe, they all got rid of their axes.
Yeah.
So I was a bit, they were all going to just somehow self-decapitate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like some street performing gone very wrong indeed. So, our three nominations for the world's worst village idiot are Barry's of the democratically elected fool of Story, Indiana, James's suggestion of the Yubberton Yawneys of Gloucestershire and their horticultural approach to architecture, and my own Danish pastries, the people responsible for the headless man of moles. Gentlemen, this is excellent. I do love it when there's an awful lot of folklore and myth and legend comes up in this podcast. And of course, that's what I expect you to bring, James. So this is this is so tricky. So we've got Barry's choice of an actual office. James is of basically a group of people doing a uniquely stupid thing. And mine of a made-up story that ends with a pretend man dead. I'm going to say, because mine are folkloric, I'm going to remove them from the contest, because generally speaking, I'd like it to be real world idiocy. So Barry's feels like sort of like it's the ley lines of foolishness have crossed in Story, Indiana, whereas the people of Ebrington, it feels like it's in the blood. It's so difficult, but I think I adore the story of the putting manure on a church spire so much. And the name as well, Yubberton Yawneys, that I think I'm going to pick James's as the world's worst village idiot.
Hurrah.
Hurrah. Very well done. You win your own unique range of dunce's caps for that, James. Before we go, we're going to give you the world's best news, which we will continue to do until the end of this damned plague. This news comes to you from the United Kingdom. It's a little delayed. I read it today, but it's actually from February, but it's so heartwarming. You have to hear it. It's about a handsome Labrador called Stumpy, who was destined to have a career as a guide dog. However, because he had a deformed leg, it wasn't to be, and he wasn't able to do it. But he found a new way to help others, which was by giving blood. And 9-year-old Stumpy is a prolific Labrador blood donor, and since the age of one, he has saved more than 100 canine lives.
Wow.
With blood transfusions. Yeah. I'd like to hope that every time he gives blood, he gets a very nice biscuit.
Yes.
This feels so unbroad for the podcast, because his owner, Ellie Pittaway, who is a vet, says, "Stumpy obviously has no idea what he's doing it for, but if he did, I'm sure he'd be very proud of himself." Just feels a little bit like, "Hi, I'm a vet. I very much exploit my dog."
Yeah, but to save 100 lives.
He's a good dog. So before we go, James, what can we find you doing, and where can we find you doing it when we get there?
Aside from staring bleakly out the window, it would be on the Lawmen podcast with Alistair Beckett King, friend of the show. He and I talk about legends like the Yubberton Yawneys, weird local bits and bobs that you probably won't have heard of before. Yeah, in fact, there's an episode on the Yubberton Yawneys as well. Also, that's from our first series, I think.
Oh, Perfect. I very much recommend tuning into that. Meanwhile, we're all off to Dubai to take a dump on the Burj Khalifa to see if we can give it those extra few inches to stay in the record books a year longer. Until next time, goodbye.
Bye.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @Podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.